just before he left town, and after finishing the bulletin, Pastor Smith stopped by my office and said, well, strike three and I'm out, that he put as the message title, One Flesh, Part Two. So, Sam, where are you? What is written is written. It's not only pressure to preach on that passage, but part two of the message. I especially am looking forward to hearing what you have to say on that. We appreciate Sam Brock. Sometimes when we have, I have my speaker for the junior high camp, and sometimes it's somebody that I'm introducing you to you for the first time. Sometimes it's somebody that you know well, and Sam and Cindy are very familiar to most of you, although I look around and some of you say, I don't know who that is. I could be looking at anybody and pointing, and that would be Sam and Cindy Brock to you. He will get up in just a moment and speak from the book of Genesis. But Sam is a valuable and humble servant. He knows a lot about camping, grew up in Christian camping. The history of our families, Sam's Brock was in my dad's youth group years ago. Cindy grew up in this church, and that has given me a sense of ownership that I can call on him at any time and say, I need you to speak 2 years from now. What's he going to say? He's a missionary. He's bound. He has to come. No, I appreciate his willingness and always has a servant's heart. He is well-respected in Christian camping and has been a valuable servant going around to different camps and serving on boards and giving advice and sometimes taking camps that are on the brink of falling into nothingness helping to revive a thriving camping ministry. So pray for him, pray for all of us, and Lord bless you as you come and speak.
That means my only hope of getting out of junior high camp is to do a poor job. And maybe they'll be like, okay, don't have that guy back. No more. We'll see how it goes. The older I get, I'm kind of like, oh, man, junior high. Like I've got to go back to that. I don't have any of these kids in my home anymore. My grandkids are not quite there yet, but it only takes a couple of hours to be like, oh yeah, because all of you in here, all of you have an inner junior higher. It comes out way easier. I mean, you just get a little tired, you get a little cranky, you get a little silly, a little more sugar, whatever. It just seems to come out no problem. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to miss the Hawaiian shirt thing. You guys might not know it, but every night, Sunday night, at a Worth It meeting, is our kind of our meeting of all of our staff. And in order to make sure that everybody's on time, right when we start, at the, like the starting time, I put my hand in a bag, and everybody's got their name in this bag, and I give away the shirt that is a Hawaiian shirt that I am wearing. I have given away a couple hundred Hawaiian shirts in my day. It's the first place I go at thrift stores to go see if they've got some good Hawaiian shirts. Every now and then I hit the jackpot. I mean, I'll see a triple X Hawaiian shirt, and he's got like seven of them in it. I'm like, oh man, that guy must have passed on because I got everything that he has, and so it's over the years it's been some fun ones, and so I'm kind of a connoisseur of like brands, brand names of Hawaiian shirts from Hawaii and all that, because you have so many of them, and every now and then I'm like, I don't want to give this one away, but Cindy is very intent on keep giving those away. So this is Cindy's home church. Always look forward to coming back. I don't know, for the past 30 years or so, coming back to this church and having the opportunity to speak. It's kind of fun to see some new faces and some people. And some of you are getting old. I was like, whoa. And it's kind of like me now. Like, I go to the barber and all my hair is cut, and I'm like, whose hair is that? That's not my color of hair. But we are all getting just a bit older. This afternoon, after the potluck time or whatnot, we will share just a short time about the ministry. Probably Cindy and I would probably describe the last 6 months as the best and the worst of our time together, not just between the two of us, but the adventure that we have gone through together. Some of it is the things that God has done in our family. Some of it is just the combination of things that God does in ways that you say, wow, how can so many bad things happen all at once? And it's not like all of them are massive bad things. Some of them are just little dinky things, like when we flew here, we sat on the plane on the tarmac in Las Vegas for about an hour. It was 113 outside the plane and about 114 inside the plane. At least that's what it felt like. And we're kind of sitting there and we're just thinking, you know, you're just doing everything you can not to get frustrated with everything that's happening and going on. And when we finally land in Indianapolis, we land a half hour after all the rental car counters closed. And so then you're like, okay, and I'd called my assistant. She'd gotten a hotel, and they were supposed to have a shuttle. And then we called the shuttle, and no, my driver went home at midnight. And so when we finally got to the hotel room, then they had failed to turn the air on in the hotel room at 2 in the morning. And it's at that moment that you just look at Cindy and you say, this is appropriate for this time in our life. Like, we knew that this was going to happen, right? We have this little song. It's an old Southern gospel song, a little song called One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. And when we have sang that song to our daughter and worked through some of the things that we've gone through, you're kind of like, I don't know why the air is... One day at a time, sweet Jesus, I've just got to live this moment. I've got to react the right way. I've got to do the right thing. At this time, I need to just keep looking to my God. So we'll share that. We'll be brief, but I hope that we'll be encouraging this afternoon as we see God work in our lives. Today, we share a passage of Scripture that I just want you to think about the word here. I don't know if you've ever had a teacher say to you, are you here? And you're like, well, duh, I'm sitting here, you're talking to me, but this teacher is still like, are you here? Which kind of implies that I might not have to be here. Let me think about that. How could I possibly be here but not be here? Now, all of us over the years have kind of perfected this skill. You're kind of looking at me. You're kind of paying attention, maybe even smiling here, maybe even nodding every now and then. But it is possible for you to be in a totally different place than right here. When we ask a person, you know, what state of mind are you in? We are asking a question about where they are. There was a couple of months ago, Cindy had convinced me. She told me a couple of years ago that she was praying that we would buy a trailer, a little travel trailer. Now, you've got to realize, Cindy and I, empty nest. In fact, all the kids now have their own nest, so that is truly empty nest. Like, when the kids have their nest, then we've got an empty nest. And this is an interesting time of life, because after you've been married 25, 30 years, you need to basically look at that person and say, hey, my name is Sam. Let me reintroduce myself. Because you change over that amount of time. And my wife says, I want a trailer. And I'm like, who are you? I mean, we had a trailer somewhere. Do you not remember the time the slider did not come out in the trailer? Do you not remember the frustrating flat tires on the side of the road? Do you not remember the times that we have owned an RV? RV standing for ruined vacation. And she's like, no, I'm praying for one. And so, unfortunately, God answers her prayers. And this is a long story. We had one Airstream little trailer that we bought for a really good price. Ended up with a second one for like half price. Long story, but it's trailer stories. And so we're testing out our trailer, and we're kind of sitting in a desert campground. It's like January, February. We're trying to roast s'mores. The wind is blowing across the fire. It is blowing sparks across toward the trailer. And I'm kind of sitting there thinking to myself, this is fun. This really is fun. This is fun. And then I'm kind of sitting there and I ask myself this question, what got me here? How did I get to this spot? I want us, if at all possible, if you could just try today, I want to look at the life of Joseph, and we're going to look at a bunch of verses. We're just going to kind of work through it. But I want you to put yourself in the shoes of Joseph. Could you just like work at saying, okay, I'm going to try to imagine what it would be like to be Joseph at this time. So let's take a look at the passage again that we just read. I'll tell you chapter and verse where we're headed, but we're going to keep on moving through it, and we're just going to ask ourselves, okay, can I imagine being in this spot? Verse 2, chapter 37, Genesis. These are the generations of Jacob, Joseph being 17 years old. Okay, we get context right there, 17 years old. Any 17-year-olds in the room? Do we have a 17-year-old in the room? Anybody? Okay, so we are either imagining when we were 17, or we're looking forward to the moment that we're 17. Okay, look back to when you were 17. Imagine what you were like when you were 17, the great maturity that you had, the wisdom, the strength. You are 17 years old. You're a mere 2 years from your prime. Everybody in this room, your prime was 19. Anything after that, you're over the hill. Anybody 19 in the room? Anybody 19 right at their prime? Ah, we've got one 19-year-old. He's in your prime. The rest of you are gone. I mean, it's over the hill. Okay. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report to them, to their father. Jump down to verse 4. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Okay, can you imagine that home? Okay, now, I'm an oldest brother, and I know what it's like to look at some of the babies and be like, "Damn, brother, they get away with everything." But I can't necessarily say that I hated my brother. There were moments where conversation were not peaceful conversations. But I was at least able to live peaceably in that home. They're saying, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, ooh, that's a rough situation there, too. Can you imagine being in that spot where you are the loved one, obviously loved, and your brothers just really do not like you? They couldn't speak peacefully to him. I don't know what that all sounded like. Verse 5, now Joseph had a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. It was a dream that had Joseph being in command, everybody else bowing down to him. This is the younger brother saying this to the older brothers, and they just are like, ugh. In their mind, the pride, the way he would have said it, the fact that he was loved, they didn't like him at all. Verse 8, his brother said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed a ruler over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Drop down to verse 14. So he said to them, go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock. Bring me word. So he sent him to the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So his father sends him on a trek. I want you to go check on your brothers, see how everybody is doing. So he is going to, he's walking out, taking off to go see them. Drop down to verse 18. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. Okay? He's on this hike. It's really hard to imagine this until you live in the desert like where I live. You can sneak up on people here. You guys have trees. And like you can hide through that. You can't see what's going on. Where I live, all the mountains are bare. There's nothing on the mountain. You crest over that ridge, and I can see you from 2-3 miles away. I mean, whatever it is, it's a long ways away. So that's what's happening here. He comes up over this hill. They see him. They see him from afar. And then they start talking about to kill him. He doesn't hear any of that. They said, so jump down to verse 23. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he's wore. That's what his father gave him. And they took him and threw him into a pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. Okay, just imagine being in Joseph's shoes. You walk up on your brothers, you're following what your dad told you to do, is to go see how they were doing. He's just going to ask for a report, take it back. There's no Facebook, there's no Instagram. You can't tell everybody what's going on. So this is the way you did it. And when he shows up, they grab him. They rip off his coat. They toss him in this pit, in like a well that doesn't have any water. They just toss him down in there. Now, if you're in Joseph's feet, you walk up, you hey, whoa, bam, boom, oh, shoo. And then, hey, you guys. I mean, they just tossed him in a pit. Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. Somebody throw down a rope. Or a sandwich. I mean, he's sitting there in the bottom of this pit. They have manhandled him, thrown him down in the pit, ripped off his coat. Verse 25. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh, and on their way down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it us that we kill our brother or conceal his... Wait a minute! Kill me. Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother in our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. Look, guys, this is our brother. Let's just sell him. Don't kill him. Ha, ha, ha. Very funny. Come on, guys, get me out of this pit. Can you imagine being in the pit, overhearing your siblings talking about what they're going to do with you? Should we kill you? No, let's just sell him. Can you imagine what's going on in his mind as he's thinking about this? So that's what they did. Verse 28. They sold him. They drew him up, lifted him out, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Okay, just in your mind, I cannot imagine what it's like to be pulled up out of that pit to see my brother doing a deal for my life, money changing hands, and then I don't know, my wrists are tied, I don't know how it all works. I'm basically attached to this crew leaving. Can you imagine what's going through Joseph's mind in the first 20, 30, 40 yards of separation? Bye. Say hi to mom and dad for me. You can have my room. Was he crying? Was he sad? Was he mad? Was he... I don't know. We don't see, we don't hear what has happened here. But that night, Joseph slept with a bunch of strangers speaking a tongue he didn't understand, knowing that his life totally changed. Totally changed. Can you imagine what he thought that night as he goes off to sleep? As he wonders what it's like back at home, but then he wonders what's next in front of him. So when they returned, they basically said, the boy's gone. Verse 36, chapter 37. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Drop down to chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard of Egypt, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. He was in the house of the Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. Drop down to verse 6. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. That's kind of cool. So he buys this guy who becomes the manager of his house. Basically, he's so good at it because God is with him. He's so good at it that he doesn't have to worry about anything in his house. All he's got to worry about is what's for dinner. That's a good manager. Joseph has done well in this situation. He's worked in that spot. The end of that verse 6, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. You jump down to verse 17. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant who you have brought among us, this is the wife of Potiphar, now begins to lie about Joseph. And he came in to laugh at me, but as soon as I lifted my voice and cried, he left his garment here beside me, fled out of the house. And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife had spoke to him, this is the way your servant treated me, his anger was kindled. So Joseph is lied about by the wife, and then the master gets upset at him. Verse 20, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. So if you're imagining being Joseph, you've now been lied about. You've been doing good work, good stuff. You've been lied about, and now you're thrown in prison. Can you imagine Joseph that night as he's thinking about his life? And he's like, how did I get here? He's now in prison. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it to succeed. So now Joseph just goes about the business of continuing to just do the right thing. And the prisoner, the guy says, wow, I'm going to put everything in his charge. And he becomes in charge of the prisoners. Jump down to chapter 40, verse 5. And one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with his own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. Here's a guy, Joseph is taking care of the prison. He comes to other prisoners. He's also a prisoner. He says, oh, these guys are, they're not doing so good. They're troubled. And he begins to ask them questions about what's going on. And then he basically interprets the dreams. It's one of the things that God had given him the ability to do. Look at verse 20 of chapter 40. On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants, lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hands, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. It exactly as he had interpreted it, that's what happened. Verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Joseph is like, you know, tell him, I don't really belong here. I didn't do it. Like how what I've been accused of, I didn't do. Remember me when you get out. And now he is forgotten. At Ironwood, we do this, the Bible Comes Alive for a group of young people who are wanting to go into ministry. And we are telling this story to that group of young people. And I don't have the ability to do this in this group. But we go to a pit. And we take one of the members of whoever is playing Joseph in our group, and we toss him in that pit. And we tell the story here. And then we all get on a tractor, put on blindfolds, make our way into a prison, which is our big shop with no windows. And when they take off their blindfold, it's totally dark. And we read these passages to them. And then, verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. And we tell everybody that a second is a day. And this is how long you have been forgotten. And we close down the lights. And for 12 minutes, we sit in the dark, realizing that we have been forgotten. Realizing that if we were Joseph, nobody remembers. We're in prison. Our family doesn't even know that we're alive. Because one of the interesting verses in chapter 41, verse 1, after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. When we read through this passage, we don't really get a feel of what is going on here. But we started this when Joseph was 17. We're 30 years old right now. 13 years have gone by. At least 2 of those were in prison, forgotten, doing nothing but getting up in the morning, doing what was in front of him, just the best part of his life being lived, lied about, in prison, in a foreign country. At this point, you're like, I thought it was going to be fun, Sam. Like, we were going to imagine being Joseph. This is not a fun story. This isn't a good thing. And if some of you have spent some time in Sunday school, you're like, yeah, but I know the whole story. But you've got to imagine it like you don't know the whole story. Imagine being Joseph at this moment. You know, 29 years, I think this is my birthday. We're in the right season of when my birthday is. I'm not sure. I've lost count. I think I'm 29 years old. It's been 12 years since I saw my mom or my dad. It's been 12 years since I've eaten my favorite food at the house. Probably my pet cat or dog or whatever their pet is probably dead. He's getting older. Verse 8, chapter 41. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men, and Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there were none who could interpret them. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, oh, I remember my offenses today. From 2 years ago, he remembers that he was supposed to remember Joseph. And he's like, oh, you know what? I remember a guy when I was in prison. Like, oh, 2 years ago, he told me what my dream was. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself, changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. Isn't it crazy how God works in our life? Isn't it crazy how sometimes you wake up in the morning and you're like, I had no idea this was going to happen. I had no idea we were going to sit on the tarmac, miss the car rental, and be a hitter at a heated hotel room. Joseph wakes up in the morning after years of being in prison, and suddenly he is hurried out. He is hurried out. He is brought out. He gets shaved. He gets cleaned up. Verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He lets Pharaoh know, this isn't me who does this. This is God who does this. Drop down to verse 28. As it was told Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. He lets him know, God is telling you what he's about to do. Verse 32, and the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God. God will shortly bring it to you. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning man. So he interprets the dream. He tells Pharaoh, you dreamed it twice, so it's going to happen. Now therefore, and he not only interprets the dream, but he gives Pharaoh some advice. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and a wise man, set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. So he basically tells him, look, you're going to have 7 years where there's lots, and you're going to have 7 years where there's famine, and that's what the dream all means. Verse 37, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a guy like this? Can we find a man like this in whom the Spirit of God is? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. This is a crazy day. You woke up in prison, leader of the prison. But now you're dragged out of prison. You tell Joseph, you tell Pharaoh his dream. Pharaoh says, you know what? I think you should be the guy. What? He's the guy. In fact, I want you to be second in command in all of Egypt. Whoa. And Pharaoh said, verse 41, chapter 41. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, having authority, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, quite a difference from the prison garb that he was wearing, and put a gold chain about him on his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Drop down to verse 45. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him in marriage Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. You talk about a crazy day. Last night, I was in prison sleeping. Tonight, I'm on my honeymoon. Second in command in all of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old. He entered into the service of Pharaoh, the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And he just went to work, doing the same things that he had done before. Okay, imagine this. You are Joseph, and you're now second in command in Egypt. Joseph has some kids. Go through chapter 42. They talk about the famine is beginning. Everything is starting to happen. Drop through chapter 43. We're going to go all the way to chapter 45. Turn to chapter 45, verse 1. What's happened in all of that part is that his brothers have come to him because he saved for 7 years. And he had all these, he had saved so much food that now when the famine came, everybody came to Egypt because they were the ones who had food. One of the largest transfers of wealth happened in these 14 years in the history of the world. Because they had saved at a time of plenty, they knew what was going to happen in the future, and so now they're able to sell it. The Pharaoh became owner of all the land that was throughout all of Egypt and all over the world during this time. So then Joseph could not control himself. He's done this thing with his brothers, and he realizes that his brothers are coming to him. They don't even recognize him. So now we're in a situation in chapter 45 where he's had some interactions with them, and now they've all come back. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, make everyone go out from me. And no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. I do not know what this looks like, but this is a big room where they are doing all the transactions of all the grain for the riches, for the wealth, paying for everything. And so Joseph has a bunch of people that are helping him with all of this. At some point, his brothers are standing in front of him, the ones who sold him to slavery. They don't even recognize him. He's in a culture so different, he's able to speak and look in a way that they don't even recognize him as their brother. And he tells everybody, leave me, leave me. And you can imagine, second in charge of Egypt, now clearing the building. I want the room. And all these people leave. What's going on? Who are those guys? I don't know. Joseph just told us to leave. So you can imagine they all left the room. And then they're listening. So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. And they came near, and he said, I am your brother Joseph. Just to make sure they remembered whom you sold into Egypt. Remember that one? That brother. Okay, they're talking to the guy who's second in command in this, that is kind of controls whether or not they eat. And he says, and now, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you have sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. How did Joseph get through? Because we're now at age 39. Okay, 7 years of plenty. We're 2 years into the famine. So we are 22 years from the time that he was sold. So how does Joseph keep a good attitude? How does Joseph kind of get through this difficulty? I believe we see in this statement, we see what Joseph believed. Look at verse 7. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. So what is the truth? What did Joseph believe that got him to this spot? God put me here. God put me here for his glory, for his work, for your benefit. But the reality was, God put me here. Okay, cool. So let's back this up. So when he is sitting in the with the Ishmaelites, he is camping out in the desert on a trek to some foreign place, doesn't even know where he's going to be. God put me here. When he's lied about by Pharaoh's wife, when he's put in prison, God put me here. When he is forgotten about, when he tells the dream, when he does a good deed, when he helps other people, and then he is forgotten, God put me here. In God's amazing big plan and his, what he knows that he is doing, God knows this is exactly where I need him. Now, from my standpoint, I've had a dream somewhere in my youth that said there's going to be a bunch of people who bow down. It is not working. I mean, was it really prison? That was like leadership at prison? That was the bow down thing? Now, I believe that God gave him a glimpse of what could be in his, what would be in his future. And now, however God works in his life is part of God put me here. This is not anybody's career path for second in command in Egypt. Nobody thinks, oh, slavery, oh, good idea, good, oh, that's a good one. Oh, lied about, put in prison, oh, I'm right on track. This is going so good. And then in a day, he's put second command. But the crazy thing to me is that doesn't go to his head. He doesn't become all caught up in that. For 9 years, he is a faithful manager servant. Where did he learn to become a manager servant, just doing the things that needed to be done? In prison, in a household. Joseph learned the culture, understood what the land was about in an upper middle class home that he was a manager of. He understood how to work with people as a manager of a prison. God was actually preparing him for what he had for him way back when we would sit there and say, oh, life is bad. No, life is exactly where God wanted you to be. God put me here. I think one of the things that we have to recognize about our life is that there's not this chance thing. There's not this karma thing. There's not this, like, ah, it's just kind of happening to me. No, God has placed you in this room at this moment on this day with me being here from California on this day to hear this message. God put you here, and he put me here. That is so cool. That the things that I go through in my life are part of a plan and a way that God just works out all the details. So I have to do like Joseph did. And wherever I happen to be, wherever my here is, I'm just going to get up that morning and serve my God, do the right thing. Over and over, you don't see Joseph, and he went into a spiral and for 2 years was depressed. We don't see him sitting there. Now, I have to believe there were some questions. There were some things that are like, I don't get this. But at the end of the day, we see a man who says, I don't have to understand it all to just keep doing the right thing day after day after day. I think it's cool that Joseph was able to look back, and there was a point in his life where he says, so it was not you that sent me here. I know you're the one who sold me into slavery. What did you do with those 20 shekels? But I know that that's what happened. But that was part of what God had in my life. Sometimes we're all about just trying to get rid of all the bad things in our life. We're like, you know what? I just want to have no conflict. I don't want to have any problems. I don't want to have any of that. But maybe God's putting you through that on purpose. Maybe it's for other people around you. Maybe it's for the glory of God. Maybe it's for the testimony of a person who believes in God. But Joseph says to these people, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and Lord of all his house and ruler over the land of Egypt. God put me here. Probably one of the truths that for me is just one of those things that helps me live one day at a time, sweet Jesus. Because I believe if I were 17 and saw everything that was going to happen, prison, lied about, forgotten, oh, ruler of Egypt? Whoa. I don't think I would have handled it very well. But one day at a time, God keeps opening up our lives. And it's up to us to respond in a way that would honor and glorify our God, trusting our God that he knows exactly where he wants us. Joseph has been such an encouragement because I see a guy who is just faithful to God and his plan, even if he didn't understand the plan. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes? I'll hand it over in just a moment here, but my hope today, I don't know your story. I do know that God's always working on everybody. I do know you have a story. And I don't know what part of the story you're on where there's just way more positive things happening than you deserve or way more negative things than you think you might be able to handle. But wherever your here is, could you possibly rest in the fact that God knows you're here? That God loves and cares about where you are here, and that God very well, positively, can use your here for his glory. Are you discontent with your here? Are you kind of bitter at your here? Are you obsessed with the why of your here? you not be willing to be like Joseph and say, God put me here? Dear God, thank you for being such a big God that you know our every detail. If you know the hairs on our head, then you certainly know the trials that we're going through. Lord, if you know what our frame can handle, you know the number of our days, then you certainly understand the things that we have been given, the things that we have that we need to be stewards of, the responsibilities, the weights that we carry. Lord, I pray that each person in this room, that as we live our lives, as we live this here, this moment, Lord, I pray that we would trust in you, have faith in you, that even if we don't understand it, we would recognize that you are a God so big that you could use tragedy, you could use what looks like a problem in a way that it's actually part of your master plan. Thank you for being a God so big that you understand that, so loving that you care about us as we go through it, so wonderful that we should offer you praise for everything that you have done. Thank you for bringing us here today. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.